This is Bristol Bay and Beyond for January 2nd, 2015. I'm your host, Dave Benninger. Happy New Year, and thanks for joining us. Coming up in this next half hour, we'll talk with Dillingham Police Chief about how citizens are helping law enforcement crack down on drug activity in town. Manicotick has a new VPSO. Dillingham will have new ways to borrow books soon. And Gabe Dunham has a rundown of news in the fishing industry. Those stories and more coming up after a look back at some of the week's headlines. A Dillingham woman was arrested last Saturday after she allegedly sold two doses of heroin to a police confidential informant. 33-year-old Darcy Clark was arrested in a cooperative investigation between Dillingham police, troopers, and the WANT unit. Clark was arraigned on three drug charges, including a Class A felony for allegedly selling a Class 1A controlled substance. The winter moose hunt for Areas 17 B and C closed Wednesday night, with at least 16 bulls reported harvested. On Thursday, the winter moose hunt in Area 17 A near Togiak opened.
And that hunt is actually run with two permits, one for bull moose, one for cow moose. And we do have quotas on those animals, and we're going to try to get 10 or just a little over 10 cow moose and 15 or so bull moose. And
that's Neil Barton with the Dillingham Fish and Game Office. The 17A hunt will remain open until the quota is met or through January 31st. All Alaska hunters are reminded to get a new 2015 hunting license, which is available at area stores or online. Neposkiok's Jackie Larson won the 46-mile Holiday Classic last weekend. That's the first major race in the YK. Temperatures were steady in the 30s and the trail was slushy, but Larson told KYUK reporters that his team did well.
They were doing good. Started picking up on my way back, but I had one injured dog. Had to put him in the sled.
In other news, a house fire in the village of Koyuk on Sunday claimed the life of Elder Ethel Adams. One man and one child were able to escape the burning home. The man was flown to Anchorage for serious burn injuries. The cause of that fire is still under investigation. 2014 set a number of temperature records, among them the city of Anchorage. Saw not one day last year when the temperature dipped below zero. Several areas set daily record highs and record lows in 2014, including Bethel last week. The low temperature on December 28 was 33 degrees, and the National Weather Service says that's the warmest low recorded since 1923, when record keeping began. Well, last weekend's arrest of Darcy Clark for selling heroin in Dillingham was the first such arrest in several months. Police say information from citizens, but specifically in this case a confidential informant who agreed to make a drug buy from Clark, led to that arrest and are helping to build other cases. For more about this, Dillingham Police Chief Dan Pascarello joins us now. Talking about this bust from earlier this week, or from last weekend anyway, you mentioned that this started with a tip from a citizen. Tell us about that.
One of our police officers, while investigating an unrelated crime, had received information from a citizen concerning the sale of heroin and who was doing it. That citizen agreed to purchase drugs for the police.
That's quite a step that the police ask people to do, but your officers and yourself and WANT have said this is one of the most important things. Do you agree with that?
Many people are willing to provide us with information, which, as I stated, is appreciated. Actively getting involved in the investigation is a little bit more difficult to convince them to do. Lots of people's concerns are
getting hurt, I imagine.
Retaliation from defendants, although I've been working in this town a long time and I can't recall any.
That's never happened.
As far as we're aware of, No, it has not.
It's probably a good thing to hear.
And also, people are concerned about being labeled a narc. And one good thing about this community focus group is they're changing the outlook of the community in that it's now socially acceptable to help put a stop to illegal drug activity in this community.
You're feeling that from the DPD, that focus group is helping alleviate that pressure.
That's true. Citizens are more willing to provide information, and I've noticed that even the attitude has changed amongst our clients, people that get into trouble, that they also want to see a stop to mainly the heroin activity in the community.
Do we have major heroin dealers in town? Are there people who you're keeping an eye on Is it all coming in from Anchorage to low-level distributors? What do you think?
Yes, we do. We have received tips on several persons in town who sell heroin on a regular basis.
If several of the top dealers were nabbed or arrested or busted, would the community get a better handle on heroin use in town, or will it just come in some other way?
Even though most dealers here in Dillingham would be considered small-time in urban areas of the state, we feel that every drug dealer here in Dillingham is a big-time dealer in Dillingham. And the more Dillingham drug dealers that we can arrest and prosecute, it will dry up for a while at least the source of illegal drugs here in Dillingham.
Okay.
Eventually somebody else will come in and fill that slot.
All right. But another thing that you like to point out, Chief, is that as much focus is on heroin right now, you say that's not the main drug problem in Dillingham. What is?
Heroin would be the main illegal drug problem in Dillingham. The vast majority of our calls for services and our investigations involve the drug alcohol.
Dan Pasquarello, Chief of the Dillingham Police Department, thanks for joining us on KDLG.
You're welcome.
Well, in related news, in Unalaska last May, police made a major drug bust at a convenience store after an informant made a controlled buy. Officers seized more than $500,000 worth of methamphetamine, heroin, and cocaine, allegedly in the possession of Tam Nguyen and Tu McConnell. And the two were indicted in state court, and Mr. Nguyen was indicted by federal authorities as well. But the case against the two has run into problems for the prosecution. For more, we turn to our colleague Lauren Rosenthal, the news director at KUCB in Unalaska. Lauren, I understand the state, at least, has now dropped all charges against both defendants.
That's right. The prosecutors have dropped their cases against Nguyen and McConnell, and they've dropped them without prejudice, which means they do have the ability to bring those charges back at a later date if they decided to go ahead with that. But for now, they're going to let federal prosecutors pursue a case against Tam Nguyen only, and he has been indicted.
Now, have state prosecutors told you why they dismissed this huge drug case against these two individuals?
The prosecutors are all unavailable over the holidays, but they did put out a media release explaining that they made this decision in conversation with federal prosecutors. And so that kind of suggests they're stepping aside to let the potentially stiffer charges that Mr. Nguyen's facing in federal court try to stick.
Okay. But I do understand there was a little bit of a problem, at least the defense attorneys are arguing that there was a problem with the way the police conducted this controlled buy and went about their bust.
Yeah, when the police orchestrated this controlled buy, they weren't necessarily targeting the store, Dutch Harbor Asia. They lined up a criminal informant and asked him to see if he could purchase drugs in the community. He allegedly went to a third party who stepped into this store and allegedly came out with heroin. And what the defense attorneys are saying is that this man was not properly or thoroughly searched before he stepped inside, so it's possible he was carrying heroin before he ever went into the store. And it's also not clear that police actually witnessed any sale. Also, once officers got wind of this alleged drug sale, they did seize the store and detain Tam Nguyen. And the defense attorneys are saying that during that time, their client was illegally searched. And when I tried to talk to the police about this, they said there's really nothing they can say until the federal case resolves itself.
Well, this is a huge drug bust. What's the sense in town? Is it perhaps that these two may get off the hook on this?
People aren't really sure. Tu McConnell has been cleared to return to the community, and as far as I've heard, she is back. But I think the perception was that if there was any illegal activity, Mr. Nguyen might have played the bigger part in that. And, it's a small town, rumors for years, which are also kind of outlined in police reports, that there might have been some illegal activity at Dutch Harbor Asia, but no one was really sure what, and it was never thoroughly investigated. I think at this point, the police are pinning their hopes on the federal prosecutors, and yeah, we'll see what happens with that case.
Well, it seems familiar problems to our area as well, and Lauren will follow along. Thanks for the update today.
Thanks, Dave.
And for one more bit of law enforcement news on this week's Bristol Band Beyond, we turn to the village of Manicotick, which welcomed a new village public safety officer last month. Joanne Knight is a teacher at the school and now occasionally writes for the Bristol Bay Times newspaper. She wrote a profile of the VPSO this week. Hi, Joanne. Tell us more about Manicotick's new VPSO and where he's from.
So Bill Yates comes from the Lower 48, where he was in private security for the last few years down in San Diego, California. He's originally from Ohio, so he says he's ready for our cold winters here in Alaska.
And what's his background coming into this very unique law enforcement position?
So growing up with a military family and moving around a lot, he just decided that he wanted to go into law enforcement so he could serve the community. And when he was of age, he went through an academy in California and became a peace officer there and served so far just as a private security guard.
Is Bill Yates the only law enforcement officer currently on the ground in Manicotick?
He is.
Okay. And this year, VPSOs should be allowed to train for and carry a firearm, and that's in large part due to the killing of an unarmed VPSO, Tom Mandol, in Manicotick 2 years ago now, or in 2013. Have you heard if this is an option the new VPSO, Mr. Yates, intends to use?
I believe it is, and he says that with his previous peace officer training in California, he's already gone through an academy where he did learn to carry a firearm and has carried in the past, and he's going to be going to Sitka for another 15 weeks of training here with our state troopers, and will be prepared to carry when he comes back.
Joanne, thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is Bristol Bay and Beyond on KDLG. Back in a moment. Well, here we are in another year, each of us hopefully setting goals, hopes, and dreams for the 12 months ahead. If one of those goals is to read more, you're certainly not alone, and you may also be in luck. As Connor Ito tells us, Dillingham will soon have more places to borrow a good book.
Libraries. To some, the word conjures images of towering shelves and row upon row of colossal volumes and dusty records. To others, a library is a quiet retreat, a place to remove oneself from the hubbub and hustle of life and visit the world of a book. Regardless of how you view books, it's hard to deny the role they play in our lives. Now, thanks to the efforts of the Dillingham Friends of the Library, the joys of reading and gaining knowledge can be closer than ever before. Enter Little Free Libraries, a project originating in Wisconsin, now a worldwide phenomenon, with more than 15,000 miniature libraries built.
You put up a box in your front yard, then put a bunch of books you have already read and want to share with your neighbors. They bring a book to add to the library and take out one that they would like to read. After a few people start doing this, the books in the library start changing all the time.
The little libraries, small waterproof boxes resembling birdhouses, have been placed in 56 countries, including Russia, New Zealand, Iceland, China, and India. Now residents in Dillingham can expect to see some miniature libraries popping up in town within the next few months. Rachel Bobbitt, a Dillingham friend of the library and a longtime resident of the town, gave some more information on the project.
The idea is to promote community literacy. So you create these little mini libraries, you stick them in a very public spot, and people can come and take books, and it's like an ongoing book exchange for the community.
The idea of establishing Little Free Libraries came from Rebecca Fonkert, who got the idea after traveling to Decorah, Iowa, and seeing several free mini libraries there. She fell in love with the idea and decided to bring it back to Dillingham. With help from the Dillingham High School and the Friends of the Library, five mini libraries have now been built, and one is set to be put up within the month.
So what we ended up doing is we took the idea and we took it to the high school shop class, and we were so grateful to have Mr. Burns, who loved the concept and found students who were willing to kind of take these ideas and make them their own. We just sent some pictures and they kind of just created what kind of library they thought would be interesting. We're in the process right now of staining them, finishing the completion, little details, and then so far we only have one location that's kind of nailed down, and that will be the fantastic new lobby at NNN.
This is an honor-based idea. As members of the community are responsible for maintaining the upkeep of the little library, and there are some concerns regarding abuse to the system. However, the Friends believe this program will be a success if members of the community work together to preserve the library.
So we're lucky enough to have a couple library members who are willing to kind of check on them, but the whole idea is to really make this a community concept. So since we're about getting both adult books and children's books, we think that the people who are more likely to use them are more likely to use them for literature.
While it is hard to tell how these little libraries will be received by the public, the worldwide success of this project is a clear indicator of the potential these libraries have for bringing members of a community together. Reporting for KDLG, I'm Connor Ito.
And Connor has been back with KDLG this winter. As some of our listeners may remember, Ms. Ito spent three of her high school semesters in our broadcasting class learning how to produce radio and later to do some reporting, as you just heard. She graduated as the co-valedictorian last summer and began her further education at the University of Alaska Fairbanks in the fall. I was curious about the experiences of a Dillingham grad turned UAF freshman, so I asked Connor to join us for more. Connor, thanks for doing this.
Well, thanks for having me.
All right, so you've been at school now for one semester.
Mm-hmm.
How's that been for you so far?
Well, it was definitely a jump from being in high school. The scope and pace is different. You're with an entirely new set of people. It's giant. The campus is definitely different than being here in our little high school of, 200, and then jumping to a place that's got almost as many people as Dillingham does.
Was it overwhelming?
In some ways, yes, but I feel like I adapted pretty quickly.
Normal freshman hurdles to cross, or did you feel different from some of your peers who came from high schools of 2,000 people in Anchorage or whatever?
Yeah, there were people who were probably better suited to move to transition into this sort of lifestyle, but there were plenty of other people who were from tiny villages, classes of four, instances like that.
Were you prepared to enter college life when you got there academically?
Academically, I feel I was prepared for most of my classes. Definitely the scope and pace is different in college. It's
How
a lot.
So?
It's a lot quicker. You're given, it's less forgiving, that's for sure.
Than a Dillingham High School course.
Yes, you could say that.
Maybe an example.
Some of the classes that I've taken through the high school will slow down during the week as athletes leave, so you cover less information and you move at a slower pace so that the entire class can grasp it. Whereas in college, I found that you just move at the pace that the teacher wants, regardless of how the class is moving, you follow the syllabus.
Were you behind?
I don't feel like I was behind too badly ever. I did have to catch up a couple times where I felt like I was not quite prepared to cover some material.
In a different vein, how often do you speak with your parents?
When I was at college,
mm-hmm.
Twice a week.
Twice a week?
Twice a week.
Was that enough for them?
Well, that was how often I actually spoke to them over the phone. We texted more often. I feel like my mom would have loved it if I called her every single day, but that just doesn't really, my schedule didn't really allow for that.
Was she all right
often.
With that?
That's debatable.
Okay.
But I feel like we did fine. I kept in touch with her well enough and.
Okay. What's been the neatest part of being at the University of Alaska Fairbanks for you so far?
Personally, I feel it was the independence. Moving out and being independent was one of the most drastic differences, and I really enjoyed the freedom that college sort of had. I liked being able to make my own decisions a little bit more and out in the world, the real world.
And now you come back on your winter break and spend time with us at KDLG.
Yes, I do.
Certainly, there are better things to do than that.
Well, I kind of want to stay busy. I don't want to completely fall out of a schedule because if I get in the habit of sleeping in till 3 in the afternoon and then staying up till 3 in the evening, that would not exactly.
Well, that just sounds like a typical freshman.
Yeah, that would not be. I'm trying to avoid that where I can.
Do you have any advice for high school seniors this year who are looking forward to college next year?
I would want to tell seniors to prepare themselves ahead of time to get ready for college. I'd want them to know that it's good to get some things out of the way before you get to college because at least you'll be practiced, academically at least. Socially, I'd say just don't be too shy about things. And even if things don't feel like they're turning out right or you miss your friends or you want to go somewhere just because of your friends, just follow your gut instead.
Good advice for all of us, and we wish you luck when you return, but we're glad to have you back here at KDLG while you're here. Thanks, Connor.
Well, thank you again.
Up in the morning and out to school. The teacher is teaching the golden rule. American history and practical math. You study them hard and hoping to pass. Working your fingers right down to the bone. The guy behind you won't leave you alone.
Thanks for staying with us on this week's Bristol Bay and Beyond. I'm your host, Dave Benninger. Just before Christmas, we learned of an outbreak of botulism that was attributed to some seal oil produced in Twin Hills. That outbreak now appears to have been contained, and those who were hospitalized have since improved. The Department of Public Health is looking to get the word out about this dangerous illness, and Dillingham Public Health Nurse Gina Carpenter came by this week to talk more. Gina, thanks for coming by to talk with us.
Hey, thanks, Dave.
Can you start by telling us exactly what botulism is? It's a term we know, but I think many of us get lost in the science of it.
Yeah, I know. I love the science of it. That's why I'm here partly. But botulism is a bacteria, and it occurs in a lot of places, especially in Alaska. So I just want to make sure that people are aware that it's in the soil, it's in the seawater, it's in sea mammals and marine life. And it's very easy for certain conditions to cause the toxin that botulism produces. That is what actually makes us sick.
Okay, the botulism is around us all the time.
Yes.
But it has to be in the right environment to create the toxin. And I think this is where many of us put ourselves at risk.
Right. And that's why we, you know, do caution people if they're ever canning, you know, or fermenting foods, that they have that risk and that they just have to be cautious. And talking about the environment, and here we are having these really warm winters, and that puts us at a disadvantage too, because normally we can store things outside and we don't have to worry about it, although freezing doesn't necessarily get rid of the toxin that the botulism produces.
Okay. Alaska has the highest rates of botulism appearing in the nation. Is that because of the foods that we eat in our state?
Yeah. Botulism's been occurring. There's been records of it in Alaska for over 100 years. So it's not just because of the advent of plastic and glass that people are having botulism illness. We've had it for 100 years. But certainly storing and fermenting foods with newer products like glass and plastic do put people at increased risk.
How do we reduce our risk?
Well, they say you need to store foods under 37 degrees, and that just those cooler temperatures keep and inhibit the bacteria from being able to produce the toxin. So when you get slightly warmer temperatures and you have any of these mammal or meat products, then you have the risk for the toxin being produced.
I was told the other week that we actually have not had cases of botulism in canned fish in Alaska, at least reported. But there's a risk for it. But I think the key there is if you follow the Cooperative Extension Service guidelines, you eliminate the risk. It seems like guarantee yourself.
Right.
Okay.
Yep. And that's the proper canning techniques of using high temperature for a certain period of time. That's why we also say with people that do eat fermented foods that you can eliminate your risk for botulism by boiling those foods for 10 minutes. However, that totally changes the food properties, which people probably don't want.
Okay. I guess another scary thing that we hear about with botulism is that it's hard to detect either by smell or sight or taste even. Is that the case most of the time, some of the time?
It's most of the time. Now, I have had some people tell me that they can tell that something's different about a food product and they will avoid eating it because they have a sensitivity to understanding what the taste is. But no, we say no, there's no taste, there's no odor, and so you can't know that you have it. So anytime that you aren't sure that something's been stored under a cool temperature, if it's been in a warm environment with no air able to get to it, like a lid is on it, then that's where the risk comes in.
The symptoms seem to resemble some other illnesses, maybe even the flu, but there are some telltale signs that you may have botulism. What are those?
Yeah, some of the big ones are just dry mouth, and you'll have problems with your vision. Either your eyelids start to get droopy, or you have a hard time keeping your eyelids elevated, or you'll have double vision. So botulism symptoms start from the head down and involves the respiratory function, and that's why it becomes deadly, is because you lose your ability to breathe.
Well, Gina Carpenter, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Dave.
And Public Health will be hosting a free informational meeting about botulism on Monday from 12 to 1 at the Dillingham Library. Well, our good friend Gabe Dunham, the Marine Advisory Program agent in Bristol Bay, is back again to bring us up to speed on news in the fishing industry. Gabe, thanks as always for coming back.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
A big ticket news item here recently was that President Obama took Bristol Bay waters off the table for oil and gas exploration. This has been a fight fought for decades. This is an indefinite ban, and it seems like good news for the fishery or fisheries.
It does. It does. There are some a few naysayers out there saying things like, "Well, the president his decision could be." Reversed by the next administration, or there wasn't that much oil and gas offshore development pressure in the region in general. But the only comment I have to offer there is that when the President of the United States singles out your region and puts it on media, that can only be a good thing.
This is a long way from our rivers here, but it does impact our salmon fisheries in Bristol Bay.
You're right. Yeah, it does. The area out there is known to support a lot of habitat for crab and halibut, but it's also one of the primary routes that those spawning salmon return to our bay from.
Can you sort of describe for the listeners where that is if they haven't seen it on a map?
Yeah, the proposed oil and gas lease area, it kind of resembles a triangle that follows roughly the coastline from Port Mueller west about 150 miles.
Okay. Let's move down to some other news here. It wasn't long back that the U.S. Congress passed a budget that included a lot of funding for fishery-related efforts. What in that caught your eye, and how does that impact us?
Well, yeah, as most of us know, the Congress recently passed a new budget, kept us from going into another government shutdown, thankfully. And the neat thing about this budget is it includes a lot of money for fisheries, and specifically about $30 million for salmon management, about the same amount of money for data buoy funding, which is where we get all of our weather updates from. We got another $25 million for sonar mapping, and a lot of that's going to map the Bering Strait, and the Arctic, which is going to be more important as shipping routes keep opening up there.
Okay. Something just popped up in the news this week that I wanted to ask you about. It was on seafoodnews.com that there's a new direct flight between, or at least proposed, between Anchorage and China. What do you know about this?
This route is run by Dynamic Airways, and they're a relatively new company that started out in 2010 from Greensboro, North Carolina. One of the ideas that's come up is that this might open up some more seafood markets, especially, and this could be especially important as the Chinese market continues to grow as their middle class becomes more prevalent and they start consuming more salmon. So as far as things go here in Bristol Bay and with wild salmon in general, this could be definitely a good thing.
Okay. Now, before we let you go, I noticed you were at a presentation 2 weeks ago, Hank Boggs, a Dillingham resident, finishing up a certificate program with the university, and he has been doing some very neat research. There's more life in the Nooshigak estuary than I think most of us probably know. That's what I learned.
Right. Yeah, that's kind of what I took away from it, too. And the sort of punchline, I guess, is that there's more than just salmon out there. And what Hank did was he put a bunch of amphipod nets or plankton nets out during various tides throughout the last winter here in right down here at the city dock, and caught a whole bunch of amphipods and another little critter I believe called a anthropod.
What are these?
These are basically just little bugs, similar to those little potato bugs that when you poke them, they roll up into a ball. They look a lot like that.
Can you see them with your naked eye?
Oh yeah, they're probably about as big as your thumb.
They're in the tank here at the university, I think.
That's right. Todd Radenbaugh has a bunch of them in his tank.
So Hank was collecting these, and the research goal was to what?
Well, the motivation behind this research was just to sort of document a little bit more information about these creatures that live on the bottom of our estuary here. And a lot of it is driven by the fact that there isn't a whole lot of research out there about these animals.
Well, thanks, Gabe. We appreciate you bringing us news of the industry here on KDLG.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Dave.
Well, before we go, there are many good things to look forward to in 2015, like a new Bond movie, a new Star Wars movie, or Benedict Cumberbatch on stage as Prince Hamlet this fall in London. There are other things this year, though, also, which are not quite as appealing.
Out on Bristol Bay, thousands of fishermen are just ramming into each other's boats. It's all in a quest to catch the most salmon and to make a fortune in the process. Check out a sneak peek of Animal Planet's new show, Alaska, Battle on the Bay.
The Yes, that's right. Animal Planet's reality TV show on the Bristol Bay Fishery has apparently finished production and is now ready for broadcast this month. Are you a fan of these hokey, dumb shows? I am not. And based on the trailer, it seems to have all the cliché bells and whistles to prudently warp outsiders' perceptions on one of the world's great fisheries and most interesting locales. Clichés like the spooky deep voice guy.
This is Bristol Bay, Alaska.
And the yelling idiots.
Look where you are!
You don't know how to fish! Don't come back here!
And more deep voice guy and more idiots.
Each year, millions of fish migrate here.
Wild, free-range, organic salmon, dude.
Luring thousands of fishermen to battle.
Get away!
If you watch the trailer, you'll see a bunch of long-haired young people who are presumably the only fishermen who agreed to ham it up for the cameras, yelling, cursing, hooting, and hollering, jumping on piles of their catch. Tell me, why is it young people seem so inclined to jump on fresh-caught salmon, or even pose nude laying on Bristol Bay's sockeye? Those fish are someone else's food, someone we hope pays a premium price for the privilege of having our fish on their plate. We should work hard in 2015 to protect our fishery and protect our brand. Are these guys really helping?
Yeah, this is awesome!
We don't catch fish here. Our kids don't eat. That's the bottom line.
Fish are here, man.
Yeah. People get hooked on drugs. We get hooked on making money.
Woo! Alaska, Battle on the Bay. New series, Thursday, January 8th at 10. Animal Planet, Surprisingly Human.
You can let me know if it's any good. Well, that's it for this week's Bristol Bay and Beyond. I'm your host, Dave Benninger, thanking you for joining us and wishing you the best in this year ahead.